This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins, and this is how most people know Vince Guaraldi. Or perhaps from music like this. Both are from Peanuts TV specials. Teaming jazz pianist Vince Guaraldi with Charlie Brown, Lucy, Linus, Schroeder, and Snoopy was pure genius, a marriage made in heaven. It also placed Guaraldi's music into the catalog of songs that comprise the soundtrack to Christmas. But Guaraldi was known in San Francisco at the time as Dr. Funk. More than the Peanuts piano guy, he was an accomplished jazz pianist and composer who worked with the likes of Cal Jader and Woody Herman and helped introduce pop music lovers to the bossa nova with his hit recording of Cast Your Fate to the Wind. Well, there are some in Charlotte who are determined to set the record straight while celebrating the music of Vince Guaraldi. They get together next Tuesday at the Booth Playhouse, and we have some of those responsible with us, or for that, with us this hour. Lonnie Davis is president and executive director of the Jazz Arts Initiative and an accomplished jazz flautist. Is it flautist or flutist when you're a jazz person?
It's flutist when you're a jazz person. We don't flout.
Do you flaunt? That's the question. Chad Lawson has been on this program several times in the past. He's a wonderful jazz pianist and composer who will be performing next week with several other Charlotte area musicians for Piano Night with the music of Vince Guaraldi at the Booth. Welcome back to the show. Good morning. I don't know which mic he's on. Five. Excuse me. Now say good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. You sound much better when there's a microphone on for you. And joining us by phone is Derek Bang, author of Vince Guaraldi at the Piano, a biography, as well as 50 Years of Happiness, a tribute to Charles M. Schulz. And he joins us where it's very early in the morning at Davis, California. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning to all of you.
This production coming up at the Booth is the product of an organization about which many people may know absolutely nothing. I don't think I knew anything about the Jazz Arts Initiative, but you regularly produce shows, who knew, called Jazz Room at the Stage Door Theater, which is downstairs from the Booth at the corner of College and Fifth in the Performing Arts Center. How did all this begin?
Wow. Well, about 4 years ago, Jazz Arts Initiative was founded, we're a nonprofit organization right here in Charlotte, and our mission is to connect the community and develop a jazz audience through education, jazz education, jazz performance, and supporting local artists.
And you came here, I understand, after Katrina from New Orleans,
yes,
kind of displaced by the water.
Yes.
And so you've been here how long?
Been here for 7 years.
So how's it going? How is building a jazz audience? Because you're never going to have the audience you have for it in New Orleans. But
sure,
what's it like? What's it been like for you?
It's been great, and the response has been great. And surprisingly, there are lots of people in this community that really want, you know, a vibrant jazz scene. And so it's made our job, you know, fairly easy to put this programming in place.
And you do this about once a month, is that right?
Yes. Well, this series has been going on for roughly, this will be the ninth month. This is our second season. But Jazz Arts, of course, as I said earlier, we do other programs. And about 2.5 years ago, we presented Delphio Marsalis in concert right here at the McLuhan Theater. That was us.
And I think you may have been responsible for getting him on this program now that
I was in the studio. And we also presented Terrence Blanchard and as a part of the Swing Jazz series. So we've been doing some, you know, pretty pretty cool things, if I could say so myself.
Yeah. And you usually put these, as I say, in the Stage Door Theater, which is downstairs from the booth and next door to the Belk. And Stage Door Theater is a kind of a perfect place for this because it's a black box, kind of a small room, kind of like a club.
Yeah, well, that's the point. Yeah, we try to convert that space into a jazz club type of.
But you've moved this for piano jazz with Vince Guaraldi. You've moved it upstairs to the booth. Why?
Because we know that our jazz room series sells out every month, and so we knew that there'll be many more people than what the average room, that normal room, can actually hold, that would be interested in seeing this program. And it's also a benefit concert for Jazz Arts Initiative, so we wanted to give more people an opportunity to be a part of this program.
Derek, you've written a couple of books, as I said, about Charles M. Schulz, the cartoonist and the mastermind behind the Peanuts cartoon strip. But did you not first start paying attention to the Peanuts by watching the TV special when it first came on the air 150 years ago?
Well, maybe not quite that long, but yes. Like much of the United States that had TV sets, I vividly remember at the age of 10 being parked in front of ours in that December evening back in 1965, and my family and I were anxious to see the Peanuts characters leap off the newspaper page, and that was pretty much all we were expecting. The show starts, and it opens with that wonderful ice skating sequence that we all know and love, and the music. Even at the age of 10, I remember being transfixed by this music, and it just got better. We get to that wonderful pop jazz number when all the kids are dancing, instead of putting on the Christmas show that they're supposed to be doing, and the credits unspool at the end of the show, and they zap past so quickly, I had absolutely no idea who had done that music. And like George Winston, who also was transfixed that day, a little bit older than I was at that time, he went haunting a record store the following day. It took me a little bit longer than that because at the age of 10 back then, I wasn't sophisticated enough to realize the possibility that somebody might put out a soundtrack to a TV special. So it took me a little bit longer, but when I finally realized there was a record to purchase, let's just say I wore the grooves off that puppy.
Yeah, it also took you a little while to write the book about Vince Guaraldi. And you've been fascinated with Vince Guaraldi since that night in 1965. So what took you so long to write the book, the biography?
Well, not too many 10-year-olds have ambitions like that grandiose. I grew up doing the usual fannish things. You buy the records by the guy with the name that you recognize. And then by the time I hit college, I began to realize that he had recorded with other individuals, notably Cal Chater. They made a bunch of albums together when Guaraldi was part of Chater's trio and quintet. And college kind of derailed me for a little bit, and then life gets in the way, and I continued to pay attention to what was going on, which wasn't much because, of course, he died in 1976. Yeah. And ironically, I wasn't to learn this until much later, when I was doing the research for the book, but he had actually performed at UC Davis, which is where I attended college, the year before I got there. So, talk about missed opportunities. I never did actually get to see him perform live. Cut ahead to the internet age, and I put together one of the first fan-based web pages with a little bit of information on him in the early 90s. And this drew the attention of George Winston, who got in touch with me, and we began to correspond. And when Winston performed an all Guaraldi music concert of his own in the late 90s, my wife and I attended, and George introduced us to David Guaraldi, Vince's son, who was there as well with his family. And that sort of planted the seed. At that point in time, I recognized that somebody had to do a book about Guaraldi, but I kept expecting that somebody on the inside would do it, somebody who had played with him because many of his collaborators were still performing and well out in the world, as it were. But nobody was doing it. And shortly after the turn of the century, somebody big in the jazz world died, and people keep asking me who it was, and I couldn't tell you. It wasn't anybody related to Guaraldi, but I realized the window was closing. And the opportunity to chat live, interview a lot of these people who've been there back in the day in the 50s and 60s was fading. And I thought, well, okay.
It's now or never. Now Chad Lawson is here, and Chad, you have your own series of albums out, and you've played a variety of different styles. He mentioned George Winston. You've done kind of that new age style of music. You've also done traditional jazz. Vince Guaraldi, most people only think of him at this time of year because of the Christmas Peanuts thing. How aware were you of, or how influential is Vince Guaraldi on what you've done with your career?
Very much. Kind of going back to his point, which was, you know, it's my childhood was, you know, iconic with two music entities in a roundabout way. That's the Muppet Show and then Peanuts. You know, I mean, that's what I remember from my childhood as far as music is concerned. And you grow up with this nostalgic memories of just. This music connecting to you as you're watching this TV show, and you're not really understanding how it's working. And then, as I've grown as a musician, I'm realizing that as a composer, you know, he was so able to connect to the listener as far as his compositions, and it's really mind-boggling because, in a roundabout way, they sound really simple, but then when you start, you know, picking them apart and actually playing them, they're like, that's not that simple. How does he do this? You know, and so he was able to create this sense of like skating. You know, the very first song that you had here on the promo.
Why don't you put a little bit of skating or you can talk about how it works
sure.
in the show.
Well, I mean, the great thing about skating is it has this great little melody. You know, and it just. Instantly just kind of pulls you in, you know, and you've got this lyrical kind of, and it just returns back to that. And there is no other picture that comes to mind except for skating.
Yeah. Well, you got 2 minutes to give us a demo. It's Chad Lawson. Only the best piano. We bring the best piano in the country in for you to play here.
It's a piano.
It was built in 1905.
Piano.
Chad Lawson, who will be among the pianists playing Piano Night with the music of Vince Guaraldi. We're going to come back in a second and talk about how this works, how this music of Vince Guaraldi works so magically in these Peanuts TV shows, because there was some controversy about whether or not that music should be in those TV shows. We'll talk about that as well when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. By the way, Piano Night with the music of Vince Guaraldi is next Tuesday evening at the Booth Playhouse, 704-372-1000 for information and tickets. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Northeastern University Charlotte, with a hybrid graduate curriculum in online and in-class courses and experiential learning with 3,000 corporate partners. December 11th, info session, graduate.northeastern.edu. And North Carolina Dance Theater's Nutcracker, a Charlotte holiday tradition with over 100 performers. performers, music by the Charlotte Symphony, December 13th through the 22nd at Belk Theater. Tickets at ncdance.org. Well, recently a review board was convened to review the practices of the police review board. They've come up with some recommendations. We will hear about them Monday at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. Healthcare.gov sees an enrollment jump after repairs to the troubled website. Fast food workers across the country protest the federal minimum wage. And the Labor Department releases the November jobs report.
Join the conversation on the News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE.
Music there from Vince Guaraldi's trio back in the, I guess, the 60s with Bolasetti, the guitarist, who you will not hear very much of in this particular section of the song. But he did a series of concerts and albums with him back then as a kind of a introduction of bossa nova to America. We're talking about Vince Guaraldi because there's going to be a piano night with Vince Guaraldi on Tuesday evening at the Booth Playhouse, and we associate Vince mostly with Christmas because of his association with the Peanuts specials. Derek Bang is the author of Vince Guaraldi at the Piano, a biography, and 50 Years of Happiness, a tribute to Charles M. Schulz. He joins us by phone from California. Chad Lawson is here sitting behind a wonderful piano that we bought just for him. He's a local pianist and composer, and Lonnie Davis is president and executive director of the Jazz Arts Initiative. They sponsor this upcoming concert and many others throughout the year. Derek, most of us think of Vince Guaraldi because of either Cast Your Fate to the Wind or the music that we hear behind these Peanut specials, most particularly the Christmas specials, because they seem to get repeated every single year. But he had a career apart from that association. As you delved into him for his biography, was that a surprise to you?
Actually, no, not at all. And I can get back to that by commenting on something that Chad mentioned a moment ago, and that would be Guaraldi's facility for melody. As part of the Calchater combos, and this was in the 1950s, and when you would attend one of these concerts at a jazz club and see these guys perform, this was a traditional thing where they'd jump into a particular tune and then each of the individuals would be given a solo. Mm-hmm. Guaraldi's solos were always mini melodies unto themselves. You felt like you could extract what he was doing and it would be a song in its own right. So from the very beginning, Guaraldi was demonstrating two talents. On the one hand, he could effortlessly pull these wonderful little tunes out of the air and enchant listeners with them. On the other hand, when the situation called for it, he could be a very hard bopper. And you get that in some of the sessions that he did with folks such as Frank Rosalino or Bill Holman or Conti Condoli, all of these people with whom he recorded in the late 1950s and early 60s. So he was much more talented musically than a lot of people give him credit for. There's no question of that. Mm.
But you have called him, you've said that his legacy is poorly acknowledged and woefully undervalued. And yet here you are, Lonnie, sponsoring a whole concert of the music of Vince Guaraldi. What about his music lit a fire in you?
You know, I am one of a number of people, many people that grew up with the Peanuts TV series. And, and there was always something about watching Charlie Brown that was different for me. I loved, you know, watching cartoons, but watching Charlie Brown, and all of those shows, it was just something about the music. And I really didn't know at the time what it was. It was because I wasn't really used to playing and listening and hearing jazz behind a cartoon. It was just kind of different for me. And so I think that really stuck with me. and I think a lot of people. And so I think that music has, you know, really been ingrained in us.
I actually found it jarring when I first heard it. Because my exposure to Charlie, I've actually never really very much liked the Peanuts cartoon strip.
is it something they said?
No. I do like Snoopy, though. But I think my first exposure to music with Charlie Brown was You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, which was the Broadway, off-Broadway musical of it. And the style of that music is completely different from the style of this music. And when I heard this music under Charlie Brown, I thought, that's wrong. Mm-hmm. That's just wrong. And CBS thought that, too. Didn't they, Derek?
No, that's true. There were many things about that first television special that were considered awkward, starting with the religious content, which was absolutely unprecedented at that time. Gentle as it is now when we look back on it, it was considered quite controversial then. And then everybody of consequence hated the concept of jazz. And in fact, Lee Mendelson, who directed and produced the special, loves to tell the story about airing the finished show in front of the CBS brass with but weeks to go before it was scheduled to be broadcast. And they hated it. Hmm. But they were stuck because production on the show had run so long that the ads had been taken out in newspapers, the listings were in TV Guide, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So they were stuck. And they said, well, you know, we're going to have to run it, but obviously there's never going to be another one. And, of course, history has indicated that then, as frequently now, TV executives don't have the faintest idea what they're talking about.
That is so true. Yeah, because I think it got a 50 share the first night that it aired, which meant that 50% of people watching television were watching that Peanuts special, and evidently they liked it because it's been back every year since.
Absolutely, although as Lee punctuates that same story, when he got a congratulatory phone call a few days later from one of those execs, there was a pause, and then the gentleman said, but my aunt still didn't like it.
One critic I read about Vince Guaraldi described him as a journeyman whose jazz career had was interrupted by a fluke hit, Cast Your Fate to the Wind.
Oh, that is so unfair.
Now, you're a kind of a journeyman jazz guy, Chad. You have your own trio, had your own trio. Maybe you still do. You've recorded with them. You recorded a couple of solo albums. And you've had a lot of airplay, particularly on the first album with the Chad Lawson Trio. That guy, I heard that everywhere, in elevators. and I don't mean that to be insulting.
Right.
It was, and on TV shows like Dawson's Creek, they played it. What's it like to be a guy who goes into clubs for a couple hundred bucks a night and plays, and then suddenly your music is everywhere? Because that was his experience.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of great points to this, and I think Vince Guaraldi kind of had this in mindset. I'm hoping, I think this may be the case, and please, Derek, correct me if I'm incorrect, to where he wrote the music, and it wasn't to, he wrote what he had inside of him. So it wasn't like he was like, okay, I'm going to write something that's really poppy and whatever is trendy right now, and I'm going to go, you know, exactly where the trend is going. You know, trend is friend, you know. And from what I read, and with Cast Your Fate Against to the Wind, that it was just kind of like a B-side. Like the DJ, you know, found this record and it was on the other side, and he was like, "Oh, what's this? And let me check it out." And you know, going back to the story of the Peanuts and people not liking the jazz, and it did so well. I think there's really something to be said about artists or whoever, you know, any kind of creative work, of really going with what you're passionate about and what's your gut, and kind of going against what, you know, Bill Cosby says that the key to failure is to please everybody. And I really so agree with that. So that makes me so happy to hear about the whole story with the Peanuts and about, you know, they wanted to take the jazz out, and then lo and behold, it, you know, becomes so iconic. And
well, he has a couple of things like that. As you mentioned, the Cast Your Fate to the Wind, it was the flip side. He was trying to capitalize on this bossa nova popularity, and there had been a movie, help me out here, Derek, a movie about Black Orpheus.
Right. Black Orpheus hit the United States in late 1959, and a lot of people were watching it in very early 1960, and Guaraldi went and saw the film and was just entranced by the soundtrack by Antonio Carlos Jobim and Louis Bonfa. And so he started shopping around his concept of his own jazz arrangements of the four primary themes in that movie. And he tried, at this particular point in time, he didn't have a contract with Fantasy because he had released two of his own albums on Fantasy and they had not sold very well and Fantasy had dropped him. Mm-hmm. So he shopped this idea to Capitol and Columbia, both of whom passed, and then came back to Fantasy. And by coincidence, Max Weiss, who was running Fantasy at the time, had been thinking along the lines of capitalizing somehow on the growing bossa nova craze that was typified by this film. So he said okay and gave Giraldi a one-album contract. Well, as it happened, the music from the film that Giraldi put together only filled one side of the album. So on the second side, he added four more tunes, two of which were originals, one of which was Cast Your Fate to the Wind. Now, Jerry Grinnelli, who was working as a drummer with Giraldi at this point in time, loves to tell this story about how Giraldi fought tooth and nail to get Cast Your Fate to the Wind put on the B-side of the 45 that was released to promote the album. Fantasy wanted the A-side to be Samba de Orpheus to bring the tie to the film out to the public. Giraldi went into the office, Max's office, and stood on his desk and threw things and pitched a fit, and they finally relented. So the record drops in April 1962. The 45 goes out at the same time. And nothing, and I mean nothing, happened for almost 6 months. Now, can you imagine that today, in the atmosphere that we have now, that a record would continue to be out there trying to attract attention almost half a year later? The way things happen at an accelerated pace today, it just doesn't move that way. But back then, things were more leisurely. And then, yes, the magic moment. It was right here in Sacramento, not too far from where I live, where a DJ at KROY was listening to all of the 45s that came in, and he played the A side of this one, and he flipped it over, and he loved the B side. And so he started playing it a lot, as much as he could get away with, given the very strict play parameters under which radio DJs operated at that time. They could not play a given album more, you know, given record more than X number of times in a two-hour block. But he was sneaky. As they approached the end of the hour, when you're leading up to the news and you only have maybe a minute, minute and a half, and you're going to have to fade something out, he'd play Cast Your Fate to the Wind, fade out into the news. So, you know, it got to be something that people were hearing a lot. And Giraldi finally got a call one day at from Fantasy Records, and he heard those magic three words that every artist dreams of were getting action. It started in Sacramento, and then Los Angeles, and then San Diego, and San Francisco, and then it just started spreading across the country. And as of December 1962, Cast Your Fate to the Wind entered the pop music chart, way at the bottom of the list, and for the first half of 1963, it just kept climbing.
Yep, and he won a Grammy for it, and he also got the Peanuts gig because of that. As I understand it, the producers had approached, they were doing a documentary before they did the Peanuts shows that we know now, and and the producer had approached, I think, Dave Brubeck.
Yep.
And who else?
Cal Tjader.
Cal Tjader. And they said, no, they were too busy. Now, I don't know whether they said whether they were really busy or they just didn't want to get involved in a documentary that was never going to see the light of day. But they said no, and he was crossing the Golden Gate Bridge, the producer was, and heard this on the radio and
Absolutely tracked
Vince Giraldi down.
Yep. Isn't that amazing?
His life is filled with serendipity, isn't
it? Oh, it's just astonishing. And, of course, the great irony to this story is that the documentary they were working on, which was sort of made in the mold of A Day in the Life of Charles M. Schulz, and it had a little bit of animation attached to it, done by Bill Melendez, who would go on to animate all of the early Peanut specials. And they went ahead and hired Giraldi to do the music, and that show was finished and shopped around, and it never sold.
You know, some of the music in the Peanut specials, particularly the Christmas special, which has gone on to become a classic Christmas music, I wouldn't even think of it as jazz, Chad. And one of them, Christmas Time Is Here, is a nice, slow ballad. Where would you put it? How would you categorize it?
Yeah, I wouldn't really. I'd almost call it as a Christmas standard more than I would like a jazz standard. You know, it's a Christmas song that, you know, everyone is so used to it being in the holidays now. I mean, it's hard not to hear the song and not consider it to be a Christmas standard. You know, it's
That's an interesting.
Go ahead, Derek.
That's an interesting distinction, because at one point in time when Guaraldi was interviewed shortly after achieving fame with Cast Your Fate to the Wind, he was asked if he hoped to write another hit. And his reply, I thought, was very prescient. He said, well, it's wonderful to write hits, but what I'd really like to do is write a standard.
Mm.
And the beauty of that, the sad, poignant beauty of that, is that although he never saw this happen in his lifetime, he definitely achieved that wish, because, as Chad said, there's no question that Christmas Time Is Here has become and will remain a standard.
So let's hear it. Let's hear the standard, one of the standards that he's responsible, because he's responsible for more than one, but here's one of them. It's Christmas Time.
I mean, lyrically, you know, going back to Derek's point, he was such a master at creating just lyrics that when you walk down the sidewalk, you can still sing it in your head. You can still whistle it when you're away from the radio or from the TV show.
And what you hear in your head, I think, are those kids singing that song, and they're not professionals. And the voices that do the Peanuts in the early Peanuts specials were not professional child actors. Another thing that CBS hated about it. Because they weren't professionals, and they wanted professional voices in there, and that's what makes it charming.
There's a rawness about it.
Yeah. Lonnie, you're a musician, and you're a jazz aficionado, and you're a jazz event producer. Vince Guaraldi,
yeah.
Put him in context with all the other people whose music you promote.
You know, I think he's an unsung, you know, just super talented composer, pianist, musician. I think he's overlooked. I think, in a sense, he's a musical genius because he has the sound, this Vince Guaraldi sound that's undeniable, no matter what style he played, you know, whether it was his electric band or, you know, whether it was the Peanuts or, you know, the bossa nova stuff that he did. It's undeniable when you listen to him, you know that you're listening to Guaraldi because of the quality the music that he did. And, you know, some of his music had a tinge of a somber, you know, kind of a melancholy feel, but, you know, it always swung. It was always in the pocket.
We have to take a break. We're coming back with more in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and U.S. Airways, which begins new seasonal daily service from Charlotte to Barcelona, Brussels, Lisbon, and Manchester this spring. More information at usairways.com. And Bradley Arendt Bolt Cummings, LLP, a full-service law firm serving the construction industry in Charlotte and throughout the nation, partnering with clients through all phases of a project. Details at babc.com. It's Friday. That means the weekly news roundup is ahead in 20 minutes. At 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. The first hour, of course, the national news. The second hour at 11, the international news. Healthcare.gov sees an enrollment jump after repairs are made to that troubled website. Fast food workers across the country protesting the federal minimum wage. And the Labor Department has released the November jobs report. Just some of the things they'll be talking about. We're talking about Piano Night with the music of Vince Guaraldi. 372-1000 for tickets for that on next Tuesday evening. And we're coming right back to hear more music and talk some more about Vince as well.
Hi, I'm Amy Rogers, editor of WFAE's food blog, WFA Eats, a great place to find new ideas and recipes for making the holidays more festive. Keep us in mind as you plan your holiday feasts for family and friends. And be sure to listen for more great food and cooking tips on The Splendid Table and America's Test Kitchen, weekend afternoons at 3 on 90.7 WFAE, listener-supported public radio.
Vince Guaraldi, Linus and Lucy. When you hear that, you can see the animation. Linus and Lucy walking down the street, and I'm wondering, Derek, if you know, when he did the music, had he seen the animation prior to writing the songs?
Oh, absolutely not. In fact, there's a wonderful story about how Linus and Lucy came about. Shortly after the anecdote that you mentioned, when Lee Mendelson was driving across the Golden Gate Bridge and heard Cast Your Fate to the Wind on the radio, got in touch with Fantasy Records, who subsequently put him in touch with Vince Guaraldi, who accepted the gig to put some swing in Charlie Brown's step, as it were. A couple weeks later, Mendelson got a call on the phone, and it was Guaraldi on the other end, saying, I want to play something for you right now. And Lee said, okay, I'll drive right over, and you can play it for me. And Guaraldi said, no, you don't understand. I have to play it for you now. Now, the backstory, the backstory to this and the reason Guaraldi was behaving this way is that he neither read nor wrote music very well in the classical sense. When he wanted to save something, he taped himself. So when he said he had to play something for Lee now on the phone, he really meant it. He went on to say, he knew that Lee knew music. He said, if I play it for you on the phone, you'll hear it, and if I happen to forget it, you'll be able to hum it back to me. And so he played a few bars of what would become Linus and Lucy. Now, I suspect that Lee has made the story a bit more apocryphal as time has gone by, but he insists that when he heard that music, he thought, you know, this is going to be bigger than I thought it was, because he was immediately taken by that tune. And how can you not be?
Yeah, it's interesting to know that you say that, and there are other musicians who have gone on to be great stars. Frank Sinatra couldn't read music. It's fascinating to think that somebody who's that prolific and that good could not read music, but it also plays into a quote that I read yesterday about him, that he's not a pianist. He is a piano player. A pianist is somebody who can sit down and play something that's put in front of him, and a piano player is someone who can sit down and play it before he sees it.
Yeah, that's a wonderful quote, yeah. And it's often used with respect to Guaraldi.
Lonnie, you're putting together this night of Vince Guaraldi music, and I'm curious as to what you've told the musicians that are going to be assembled there on Tuesday night. Are they going to be there just to give their take on Vince Guaraldi, or are they there to duplicate Vince Guaraldi?
They are certainly there to put their flavor on the music of Vince Guaraldi. As all of our jazz room concerts go, we do tributes to different jazz musicians, different legendary artists, and so this month it is a tribute to Vince Guaraldi. And so they will be doing their renditions of Vince Guaraldi holiday music. And I will add that there will be some other holiday classics with jazz flavor as well. But the night is all about Vince Guaraldi, and they will be putting their flavors.
So what does that do? You're one of the pianists who have been asked to participate in this, Chad. So when you're sitting down to play either the stuff that you're being asked to play is iconic. So what do you do? What kind of a pressure does that put on you?
Yeah, you don't take it lightly by any stretch of the imagination. You're still trying to give respect to Vince Guaraldi, of course, but also trying to put your fingerprint on it as well without deviating too far away from Vince's original mindset, from his original, what he intended it for it to be. So it's more of an honor because, something like this, with Vince's compositions, you don't want to mess them up, because they are iconic for that reason. I hate to use that word again, but it's so true. He was able to write something that it doesn't need changing. It doesn't need to be fancied up or pittied up or manipulated.
But Lonnie Davis mentioned that there are going to be other holiday favorites played in addition to mostly Vince Guaraldi, and I think you have another holiday favorite that you are prepared to. And we don't have Andy Williams here, so it's just you.
It's
just you, Chad.
Well, yeah, his flight was delayed.
I'd say.
This is kind of towards the season, the most wonderful time of year. So just kind of a... Yeah, Chad Lawson,
in your take on Most Wonderful Time of the Year, it's a little blend in there of what you've gravitated toward in your career, it seems to me, where you started out as a typical jazz trio kind of pianist into this, for lack of a better term, new age music that you've put out in the last couple of albums on?
Yeah, I've been calling it alternative classical, actually, is what I'm trying to coin it as. That's actually on my Christmas album. Not that I'm here to plug my Christmas album. That's not ChadLawson.com by any means at all.
Oh, well, does that mean I get to plug my book at McFarlane.com?
Why not? You got anything to plug, Lonnie? Of course you do.
Yes, indeed. www.thejazzarts.org.
Where you will find out about the other concerts coming up.
But
going in January, February, March.
Going back to Vince Guaraldi real quick, I think the reason why listeners were so able to connect with him is that he was actually able to play music. He had this incredible ability. He could play hard bop. He could do all the angry jazz, and he could really try to outplay each other. And I think what he realized is that's not what affects people. He was able to write music that people actually wanted to listen to and enjoy. And it was funny because I was reading something where somebody asked him, "Do you ever get tired of playing, Cast Your Fate?" And he goes, "No, I enjoy it. Why would I get tired of playing something that makes people happy?"
Right. And getting back to what you said a moment ago in terms of the responsibility that you feel when you sit down to play, say, one of his compositions, and quote-unquote not wanting to destroy the opportunity. And I think it's important to remember that jazz is an improvisational art form. Garaldi never played his own stuff the same way twice. Mm. I have several dozen different recorded versions of him doing Cachafé to the Wind or Linus and Lucy, and sure, the core melody always starts off the same, but when he hits the midpoint bridge, he sails off in all kinds of different directions.
Yeah, that may be the curse of modern technology, because we listen to the same recording of a song by an artist over and over and over and over and over, and those, even the riffs, even the ad-libs that they put in the recording become part of our impression of what that song is supposed to be. And then we go to a live concert by that same artist, and they don't remember that because they don't listen to that record. They play it a different way every night, and we think, gee, that's not how it's supposed to go. And so it's kind of a curse, I suppose, in some ways. Garaldi described himself as a reformed boogie-woogie player, which...
he wasn't too well reformed, actually.
And he was also dubbed Dr. Funk by the folks in San Francisco back during his heyday. Why Dr. Funk?
Oh, because everything he did had this funky little groove attached to it, which was somewhat unusual at the time in the 1950s in San Francisco. I mean, it sounds quaint to us now, and I wouldn't call it groundbreaking, but it was catchy. And we can imagine, I was never able to trace exactly the night or who it was that may have said it first, but we can figure that somebody in the audience, or perhaps even one of the musicians, after Garaldi hit one of his piano improvs in the middle of Chater's mallets on either side of a given tune, probably shouted out, "Hey, that's pretty cool there, Dr. Funk."
That's cool.
You know, he played clubs like the Hungry Eye. This is back in the 60s when the clubs in San Francisco were kind of beatnik-y. And jazz was heard on the radio, and jazz was being played around college campuses. It was very hip. It was kind of like folk and jazz were the hip things to listen to. What happened? Why did that go away?
Oh, demon rock and roll. Seriously, the Beatles hit, and it took a couple of years, but the moment the Fab Four crossed the pond, jazz clubs across the land, San Francisco and elsewhere, were dead. It just took another couple of years for the bodies to stop kicking.
You describe, I think, the atmosphere in those clubs at the time as being unforgiving. In what way?
Well, it was a horrible place to try to play because people were chatting and drinking, and you had the clinking of glassware and spoons. And the worst part, of course, was that everybody smoked. And a lot of these places were very small buildings, seating maybe 100 to 120 people. Some of them were in basements. And one of the reasons they had three different sets in a given night was so they could throw everybody out of the room and ventilate as much as possible. I mean, I can't even imagine at this point in time. And yet at the same time, some people fought back, and Garaldi was one of them. He would occasionally, he had a regular gig at the Trident just across the Golden Gate Bridge in Sausalito, and this was more of a supper club, and he insisted that people pay attention when he played at the piano. If people were talking, he was not above telling them to knock it off.
Wow, good for him. Mm-hmm. Would we be having this conversation about Vince Guaraldi? Would you be doing this concert of Vince Guaraldi's music, this tribute concert, had it not been for the Christmas albums, for the Peanut specials?
Oh, I hate to say, probably not, to be very honest, because so many people connect mm-hmm. Vince Guaraldi with the Peanuts, the Holiday, you know, Charlie Brown specials. And so outside of that, as I said earlier, I think he's unsung, and not a lot of people know him for all of the other great music that he composed and performed.
Mm-hmm. He died young, and he the way he died is, I guess, the way to go if you are a musician or any kind of performer. He was 47. It was 1976, and it was between sets at a jazz club. Here's a guy who I think had already had success on television with these Peanut specials. He had his hit record, Cast Your Fate to the Wind, and yet you point out that he was probably paid, Derek, between $200 and $300 for this gig he was doing in a little hotel in California.
Butterfields. It was actually a restaurant attached to a hotel, and it was a comfortable gig, and that's important to remember. One of the reasons, one of the very important reasons that we don't know Garaldi better today, well, everybody here on this show knows Garaldi very well, but I'm talking now about the mainstream public. He didn't tour. Once he was able to receive a steady paycheck through the Peanut specials that he was doing one and two a year for about a decade there, he basically stayed in the Bay Area because he enjoyed just going to a local club with two or three musicians at his side and performing. And so he was doing what he absolutely adored when he was playing in Butterfield.
And he had some success with Cal Jader recording in the early 50s and walked away from that because he preferred playing in clubs to being in a recording studio. And because he walked away, he kind of honed his skills and developed this sound that we now know of or think of as Vince Guaraldi's sound today.
Absolutely.
You're doing several concerts coming up in January, February, March, piano, jazz, and you call these, I'm trying to find this in
the
my
jazz
notes.
Room.
Thank you.
The
jazz
the
room
stage door
at
theater.
The Stage Door Theater. And you've got a tribute to John Coltrane in January, Clifford Brown in February, Wes Montgomery. So is that going to be piano or guitar?
That's guitar.
Okay, I was going to say. how do you figure out what you want to do in terms of these monthly albums?
You know, it's kind of tough because there's so many great jazz legends to be highlighted, and it's just a matter of finding balance and finding, the right musicians to perform those works.
Are the audiences building?
It is, and it's actually, you know, but like I said earlier, it's been sold out. This series has been sold out since the very beginning, and so we're trying to find ways to expand it at this point. But it's been great.
Well, Piano Night with the Music of Vince Guaraldi is at the Booth Playhouse Tuesday evening at
6:30. But we have a pre-reception that starts at 5:30, so you can come and, you know, take part in the silent auction and, you know, have drinks and, you know, eat some of the great catered food that's been, you know, provided by some of the local restaurants.
And if you like the music, you need to support it, and that's what that's all about. 704-372-1000. Thank you, Alani Davis. She's the president and executive director of Jazz Initiative. Chad Lawson has graced us with his 10 fingers very well today. Thank you very much.
And thank you for having me.
And Derek Bang, author of Vince Guaraldi at the Piano and 50 Years of Happiness, a tribute to Charles M. Schulz. Thank you all.